Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to Reel at the Movies. Robert Waldman back in action. Lots of brand new movies to talk about today, including one or two holdovers that really are still going strong. Want to begin by taking you on a trip of sorts. Ever got married? Ever thought about getting married? Well, I have the perfect romantic comedy for you, and it's called The Proposal. What's interesting about this movie is I thought, without knowing too much about it, maybe seeing the trailer once or twice before, I thought this would be your standard syrupy boy meets girl romantic comedy. Not so. I was quite nicely taken aback. No doubt getting married is a pretty big decision. Couples have been confounded for years when it comes to tying the knot. Marriages of convenience can also be problematic, as is the case with arranged liaisons in the modern world, so very common in various ethnic cultures. Unpredictable interests collide in the most unusual way in The Proposal, a fine summer romantic comedy from Touchstone Pictures, now warming hearts at Tinseltown on Pender with free parking, Empire Studio 12, Colossus, and famous players Silver City sites around BC. Big business has been getting a black eye recently, what with the shenanigans on Wall Street. Small and medium-sized businesses, on the other hand, are often admired and respected by the public. Success in business often depends on who you have working for you. One upscale book publisher gets by largely on the work ethic of one Margaret Tate. Taken from Meryl Streep's patented The Devil Wears Prada school of know-it-alls, Ms. Tate rules the roost with an iron fist. Everyone seems to walk on eggshells whenever she walks through the door, any door, on company property. Or elsewhere, perhaps. Only her trusty aide, Andrew Paxton, seems to be able to put up with her. Thanks to a rather obscure legal dilemma, Ms. Tate gets the shock of her life. Told to buck up or leave town, this dragon lady devises a rescue plan that sees her flee the coop and head off to Alaska in a last-ditch effort to save her upwardly mobile career. Things go from bad to worse in the land where the sun never sets, as Margaret gets to know all the members of Andrew's family in a clumsy effort at romance. Director Anne Fletcher from 27 Dresses knows her way around romantic comedy, and here she's lucked out with a great cast and a pretty heartfelt story. Like the fish out of water, Sandra Bullock from Speed comes on strong as the bitchy Margaret, a take-no-prisoners type who runs smack dab into a dilemma, largely set forth by her naivety. Vancouver-born Ryan Reynolds from X-Men Origins Wolverine comes through big time as a romantic foil to a boss who undergoes his own radical change in this crowd-pleasing movie. Without wanting to give too much of a story away, let's just say there is major under-the-surface chemistry between Bullock and Reynolds here in a feel-good kind of movie. Family is truly at the heart of his 108-minute film, but also boasts some truly remarkable scene-stealing secondary characters. Worth noting is ageless wonder Betty White from Bringing Down the House as a raging granny and a Latin actor who's kind of a showstopper. I can't stop smiling when I think of that routine this guy does. Sure to be the date flick of the summer, The Proposal rings true and opens up a whole new dimension concerning family relationships, big city versus the country issues, and the need to commit. That's why, on a scale of 1 to 10, hey, I'm proposing to give The Proposal, I'm going to give it, I'm debating whether it should be 7 or 8. You know what? Let's be in a nice sort of mood. Let's give it an 8. Speaking of comedies, I wish I could say the same good things about the next movie. A movie that, by the way, a lot of critics are poo-pooing. But I gotta tell ya, even though they're poo-pooing year one, there are some redeeming aspects to this film. Remember, know which audience you are targeting. Know which audience you are trying to appeal to. And I think that's the key with year one. Comedy, you see, can be very fickle. Team up two laugh masters with a veteran director who knows his way around humor, and you end up with year one, the latest escape yarn from Columbia Pictures, now seeking converts at Tinseltown on Pender Free Parking, Colossus, Empire Studio 12, and famous players, Silver City Theaters all around BC. History comes alive in this rousing laughter, but takes hold way back when cavemen were in vogue. And I guess you might say they kind of ruled the world. Cast as outcasts of your first village are Zed and O, two sad sack losers who are the butt of the more he-man of a tribe. Women turn their backs on these nerdy slobs, who somehow wind up on the short end of countless sticks. Ridicule comes their way easily, as the two are thrown to the wolves, cast out, and then seek a new beginning in a somewhat more favorable promised land. Presented by comedy king Judd Apatow, under the mindful eye of consummate director Harold Ramis from Ghostbusters, this joke-filled yarn works. Yes, it does work, and remember, you're gearing this movie towards guys, mainly, who are, I guess, what, between 10 and 15? And I gotta tell you, I understand they were howling at this movie. Here the key is the script, and Ramis absolutely milks tons of historical themes, ranging from cavemen up and to, including a host of early biblical milestones. Roly-poly Jack Black from School of Rock gives his eyebrows another good workout opposite likable Canadian expert Michael Cera from Superbad, who again plays a quintessential yes-man, goody-two-shoes type. And he's also quite shy. Talk about typecasting. Unfortunately, we've seen both these actors doing the same type of shtick before. Shtick, by the way, is routine. Fans of their mannerisms will like them again here, as they do work well together and the one-liners are quite engaging, with the jokes being so juvenile they do in fact work. No stretches of variabilities are evidenced here, as it's more of them playing the same patented characters over and over again, albeit in a different time period, so you could say it gets kind of tiresome. Not all the jokes fire and work, but most do, making this a nice, lightweight comedy worth your attendance if you like juvenile humor. More fun is experienced with the robust supporting cast, including some very funny bits from the likes of Oliver Platt, Vinnie Jones, and Christopher Mintz-Plasse. Expect to get numerous good chuckles during this 97-minute offering, with a warning to stay tuned for the credits. What doesn't work, however, are too many abrupt movements from one scene to the next that have no transitions, showing either sloppy editing or poor foresight in writing. Excuse me. That's why, on a scale of 1 to 10, I'm going to give Year 1 a 6. And I guess you could say I'm being sort of generous in my critique of this movie. But again, if you're looking at that teenage male audience, I think for the most part, young kids are going to get a kick out of it. Too bad I couldn't say the same of a couple other recent movies. There's another dreadful movie with Will Ferrell, and I got to tell you, I was at a movie screening recently. I usually get to theaters early for the media or promo previews, and as I was just getting my tickets, an hour early no less, because I like getting early and relaxing, a guy walked out onto the foyer saying, "Don't see Land of the Lost, worst movie ever." I got to tell you, he hit it dead on. Talk about a waste of time. Year 1 is like an Oscar-winning performance category, caliber film, compared to Land of the Lost. It's taken basically from a 1970s television series that I guess was popular way back then. Well, unfortunately, this movie is totally lost. Will Ferrell stars as a nerdy scientist who's got some theory about traveling back into time. We've seen this time and time again, and often done a lot better. Here, Ferrell goes back in time as a professor, winds up in some prehistoric land where there were dinosaurs of sorts, and ends up meeting a hairy creature like a Chewbacca. And the jokes are so juvenile, tasteless, trying to poke fun of sexual nudity and sexual aspects. They just don't work. The story is so bland, so boring, so dull. They needed a script. There's some cheesy special effects. The other characters are equally adrift. And Ferrell is actually quite lost in this movie. I feel sorry for the guy because, obviously, he didn't pay too much attention to thinking long and hard about this story. Now, in terms of local filmmaking around Greater Vancouver, there's obviously been lots of hype about the movie Twilight. Twilight 2 has just been wrapped, and Twilight 3 is starting film production in Greater Vancouver. Greater British Columbia, I should say. I think that starts in August. In the meantime, the big star of Twilight, Mr. Pattinson is in a new movie, and wow, what a departure from his vampire-loving days. The movie is called Little Ashes. Heartthrobs are a dime a dozen in Hollywood. Flavor of the month, Robert Pattinson soared to unbelievable heights as a handsome vampire in Twilight. How female fans respond to Robert's latest take as Salvador Dali will be a test of his staying power. Journey back in time to learn all about this famous artist in Little Ashes, an obscure guilty pleasure from VK and Associates, now destined to be a real conversation starter at Tinseltown on Pender Free Parking. You don't need to be an artist to appreciate genius. Little Ashes explores the rather colorful life of Spanish sensation Salvador Dali. Early on, we see, back in 1921, the seeds of a young man poised to set the world on fire. Hearts quicken whenever this newcomer enters his new home, an artist colony of sorts, frequented by rising intellectuals, rebels with causes, and a group of eclectic, well-meaning males. Despite a very slow start, we see Dali develop from a shy newcomer to an accepted agent of change. Taken under the wings of two gents, Dali becomes a subject of adoration, not only for his artistic prowess, but for his body and soul. Special relationships develop between Dali and filmmaker Louis Brunel, as well as resident poet Federico Garcia Lorca. Over time, the relationships these three have becomes quite eventful as political changes sort of drive a wedge between the trio. Director Paul Morrison does a pretty good job recreating the heady atmosphere of these bohemians during the Spanish Cultural Wars and Rise of Franco. That's General Franco. Cast as Dali is Robert Pattinson, who sort of grows into the role. Brave best describes Pattinson's sexual prowess here, as he definitely steps up and takes some chances that are bound to throw female fans through a loop. Others also will be thrown through a loop, I think. Very strong are the supporting male friends, well defined by Matthew McNulty and Javier Beltran. Some of the sex scenes here sizzle with not too much left to the imagination. Little Ashes does a good job exploring the rise of Dali and how he turns rather eccentric, to put it mildly. 112 minutes takes time to develop the characters, but when it does, it shows just how messy unconventional relationships can be during a time of political turmoil and unrest. Exploration of a soul meshes with morality in this rather provocative little display of a genius artist whose madness may be a bit too hard for his son to swallow. What does not work is the ridiculous makeup thrust onto Pattinson, giving him a rather ridiculous image, and segments allegedly shot in France are somewhat laughable. Loose ends are also likely to lessen the impact of this movie. Little Ashes, it's certainly a movie for an acquired taste. It looks at different lifestyles, it looks at historical figures, it looks at the world of art, but it's slow, dreamy. Pattinson sort of sleepwalks his way through the movie. That's why I'm giving the movie, I'm always debating, 5 or 6, 5 or 6. I'm actually quite generous. I'm going to give this movie a 5. Sorry, Pattinson fans. I think he's going to do a little bit better in his next outing, Twilight 2. The beautifully shot film that I think is going to be hitting theaters later this year. By the way, just a sneak reminder, Harry Potter is back. I don't know what movie it is. Is it a 6th or 7th? My oh my, are those characters, those actors, getting a little bit beyond the teen years, you might say. But expect the new Harry Potter movie to be another box office bonanza for our friends at Warner Brothers.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys, girls, and everything in between, step right up as the Youth Co-Aid Society proudly presents Acquired Taste, a carnival of sensations.
On July 9th at 7 p.m., the Big Top hits Canvas Lounge at 99 Powell Street with a feast of all things circus, featuring burlesque and belly dancers, drag performers, aerialists, fire spinners, and jugglers. All proceeds from the premier silent auction go to support prevention education in youth impacted by HIV/AIDS.
Auction donations and ticket purchases can be handled at www.youthco.org or the Youth Co. office downtown. Sponsor a ticket for someone else in true circus style, one night only, July 9th.
Well, I kind of enjoy that. It's always nice to support new endeavors and to get out and support your community. Speaking of community, how many of you take transit? Well, I guess a lot of you have taken transit at one time or another. I know I quite often take the bus. Boy, I got to tell you, that beeline, does that get crowded? Oh, mamma mia, wow, wow, wow. I think we need more buses coming to and from UBC. That's my opinion. But on occasion, I take SkyTrain. We don't yet have a subway in Vancouver, or British Columbia for that matter, but we do have a subway on screen in our next movie. It's a thriller called The Taking of Pelham 123. Remakes can be rather tricky affairs. Sometimes redoing a classic can go off the rails. Put master director Tony Scott at the controls, and odds are good whatever he touches will turn to gold. Columbia Pictures teams up with MGM Studios to deliver the goods big time with The Taking of Pelham 123, a full-on 106-minute action-packed tale now driving heartbeats up all over BC. Speed on the rails may well be the slogan to promote this action classic, which turns up the excitement from the first few minutes and never falters. New York gets more than its share of bad press, and press coverage in general. Known as the financial capital of the world, the city that never sleeps attracts a wide variety of characters. Commuting in this city can be a nightmare. We think we got it back in Greater Vancouver. No way, Jose. Forget about traffic chaos in Vancouver or any other Canadian city. Smart folk take public transit. Rich people, by the way, take taxis. With Transley's current head hailing from New York, by watching The Taking of Pelham 123, we sort of get an inside view of what mass transit is all about. Excuse me. By day, transit employee Walter Garber goes about his regular routine of overseeing the subway system. Things go from bad to worse for Walter when out of the blue things go wrong. Just like the traffic chaos so evident in Live Free or Die Hard, with The Taking of Pelham 123, some maniac has taken control of a subway. Imagine that, and I gotta tell you, whoa, that's a pretty scary thought. Chaos ensues, and we get immersed in a monumental struggle pitting a renegade crook and the best brains of transit and the local authorities. Haas's negotiations can be tricky affairs, and Garber winds up in a colossal fight with a hijacker, an unknown entity named Ryder. Sparks fly, and the tension never falters as it's a race against time to see if anything can be done to regain control of the trains and the innocent people trapped inside. Dynamite tension explodes on screen as two consummate actors bring their best to the roles of Ryder and Garber. Oscar-winning Denzel Washington from American Gangster plays a shell-shocked transit official caught in an unbelievable psychological power play. Cast as his opposite number, the evil genius Ryder, is none other than John Travolta, the dance man. Few can do bad or sleazy as good as Travolta, and here he is in top form. Special effects take a back seat to the interplay between Travolta and Washington, who play off of each other like wildfire in this hugely entertaining action flick masterfully directed by Tony Scott. Smart, exciting, and quite realistic, The Taking of Pelham 123 also offers good secondary casting through the smart use of James Gandolfini, Luis Guzman, and John Turturro. Rousing from start to finish, The Taking of Pelham 123 is well worth taking a ride to theaters for. That's why, on a scale of 1 to 10, I got to give this movie an 8. Just as a quick aside, if you're a movie fan, if you watch TV, recently on TV was The Taking of Pelham 123. No, not the new movie, but the movie that came out, oh, I don't know, 10, 20 years ago. Good casting, Walter Matthau and Robert Shaw. Remember Robert Shaw? He starred as Red Grant, Agent Red Grant, in the James Bond classic From Russia with Love from 1962. 64, I should say. Smarten up, Robert. I thought the new one was better. There are obviously lots of similarities and some differences, and I guess when the original Taking a Pelham 1-2-3 came out, it was quite interesting, quite tense, quite enjoyable. This movie here, well, you've got, I shouldn't say better actors, but let's just say it's got a more modern feel to it, which is why I liked it a lot. One of the things we like doing on occasion, on reel-to-reel at the movies, is we like mixing things up a bit. Gotta tell you, I had the opportunity of going to Bard on the Beach again for the Comedy of Errors. Quite often in live theater, and sometimes in actual movie theaters, there's clapping at the end of a show. More often, I think, in live theater, obviously. Well, I got to tell you, there was just a rousing ovation after the curtain went up on The Comedy of Errors. It's another William Shakespeare play. I guess it was made, back in the 16th century. And it's full of humor. It's about a number of twins. It's about mixed up identities. It's about missing gold. And it's about some women with husbands and Christopher Gaze, who's the mastermind behind Bard on the Beach, plays a queen of sorts. Just ridiculous fun. What can I say? And one of the things I liked is the way the actors sort of interact with the audience. They're coming onto stages from all different parts of the auditorium. And I got to tell you, the Bard on the Beach on a beautiful summer evening, it's really one of Vancouver's hidden treasures and a pleasure to behold. I also saw, by the way, at Bard on the Beach earlier on, Othello, and I thought that was an even greater movie, a greater play, with such a gusto performance by the tormented Moor, a black man who ends up falling for and romancing the daughter of a duke. And that duke doesn't really take too kindly to having his white daughter get involved with a brown-skinned man. So that play, I think, has more relevance today in terms of what's happening in modern society. But those are two good, fun experiences. One, a serious Bard on the Beach, Othello. The other, a more frivolous, lighthearted, comical portrayal called The Comedy of Errors. And one of the things I liked about The Comedy of Errors, gotta let you in on, is that there's some very clever use of modern music with some classic tunes from, I guess, the 70s and 80s to perfectly jive with the dialogue. And I got to tell you, there's some very funny asides to the audience. It really makes both productions a pleasure to behold. I would recommend checking out Bard on the Beach, the website, www.bardonthebeach.org. Just a couple different offerings for you as summer progresses.
How long do you think it'll be before I can do the show?
You're starting tonight.
Well, do it live! If you talk to the average teenager of today and you ask them what it is about rock and roll music that they like, the first thing they'll say is the beat, the beat, the beat.
The Biltmore Cabaret at 395 Kingsway is Vancouver's newest live showroom devoted to independent music of all genres.
But a lot of these groups are nothing but pure carnality and fleshly and so forth. But
check out BiltmoreCabaret.com for upcoming show info and DJ nights.
You're pretty happy with the way you look and the attitude you've got, are you?
Hey, you know, I got to tell you, going out to a nightclub is a lot of fun. Quite often, though, when you go to nightclubs, you might decide to imbibe a bit, maybe have a drink or two. Well, don't go drinking if you go to Las Vegas, because that's one of the aspects of probably the most hilarious movie this year. Maybe one of the funniest movies ever made, called The Hangover. Talk about a sleeper hit. Last hurrahs can be lots of fun, loads of fun. Loads of laughs result when a bachelor party somehow goes off the rails in The Hangover, one of the funniest movies ever. Warner Brothers did something right when they read the hilarious script and let director Todd Phillips from Old School loose with a little-known cast. After the sure-to-be blockbuster, all the actors concerned should have their phones ringing off the hooks. What happens in Vegas stays in Vegas. Funny how that was the name of another would-be comedy with some major stars a few years back that failed to click at the box office. Not so with this movie. Odds are in The Hangover's favor, as the story here is so simple and stupid it works like wildfire. Out to have an eventful send-off for their friend on his way to being married are three good buddies and the man of the hour. Now, we all know Las Vegas is one place where you're not supposed to keep track of time. That's part of the lure of the casinos and all that decadence. Fun is supposed to be what you're to have. Vegas is a venue or choice to sow wild oats, and what better place to live out your fantasies and final days as a bachelor? At least that was what was supposed to happen to groom-to-be Doug Billings. I'm actually smiling as I'm trying to recall this movie. Going to Vegas with Doug is a slick teacher named Phil Wenick, Dr. Stu Price, and larger than life Alan Garner. Each of these fellows has their own ideas of what type of fun to have in the gambling capital of the world. Unfortunately for the boys, they sort of lose track of what went on during a night of frivolity. Oh, and the men also lose Doug. Insane efforts are made by this trio of klutzes to search all Nevada for their long-lost friend. With only hours before the wedding, they have no clue how to break the news to the bride who is waiting on pins and needles for her man to be at the altar. After all, you know, getting married, that's a pretty big day. Races against time have occurred in numerous films on a variety of themes. Here the energy is so pent up and the efforts made to find out what happened so zany it works flawlessly. Chemistry is vital to road-themed movies. Here the casting is outstanding. Suave meets suave in this tale that for 103 minutes will have people constantly laughing out loud and likely clapping at film's end. That's how much fun and how good this movie is. Those into good looks will be egging on Bradley Cooper from The Rocker as resident hunk Phil, while those ready to march down the aisles will be hoping that lost groom Doug will resurface. Otherwise, Jerry Bruckheimer will have to find someone other than Justin Bartha to work in all those National Treasure movies. Completing the foursome of these visitors to Vegas are Zach Galifianakis from What Happens in Vegas and Ed Helms from Semi-Pro. Be sure to stick around for the end credits as the humor continues in this ribald tale of grown men who make some bad decisions and only wind up in deeper comic chaos in The Hangover. While other films have been set in this gambling mecca, nothing comes up to the wild times depicted in this really raunchy treat. I guess I could say, it's like old school. The Hangover is like old school with a restricted rating. Don't let that disturb you. Don't let that turn you off. You're going to be turned on by this movie. I was, which is why I'm giving this movie a stupid comedy that's hilarious, a 9. And that's pretty good. Now, let's go from a stupid comedy to a wonderful foreign film that also deserves your attention and recognition. The best film, foreign film from last year is now in Vancouver, and it's worth checking out. It's called Departures. Great Japanese tale about a young man looking for a new job. What kind of work he has, how it affects his family, I'm not going to tell you. Let's just say it's a superb relationship film and a superb tale of change. That's Departures. Now, if you like foreign films, that film was in Japanese with English subtitles. Doesn't matter. Go see this movie. Another movie that you should see is part of the French Film Festival taking place at The Ridge. If you get a chance, check out Summer Hours. It's a wonderful tale, again, in French with English subtitles, all about a family, two brothers and a daughter, two brothers and a sister, I should say, who have to decide how to help mother, who's getting rather old, who's got a lot of things and a lot of possessions, and just what happens if something should happen to mom, who's very elegantly attired, who lives in a great palatial home, and who might have a couple collectible items, maybe an antique here, an antique there. As such, this is a kind of movie about aging, about how youths and how families deal with family crisis and tragedy. Wonderful movie. On a scale of 1 to 10, Summer Hours, starring Juliette Binoche from Chocolat, I'm going to give this movie an easy 8. Want to remind people, Johnny Depp back as John Dillinger in Public Enemies, opening very, very soon. The Transformers with Shia LaBeouf. It's 150 minutes, 2 hours and nearly a half. And it's supposed to be a rousing tale, executive produced by Steven Spielberg. What can I say? Leaving off with Spielberg, I want to thank you, want to remind you, later on today on CITR, my good friend Daryl Wiener on Wiener's Barbecue for all that's hot in sports. Do you think the Sedin should get that kind of money? I don't think so. Robert Waldman for CITR FM 101.9, UBC's Top Dog Radio. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you